This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories.
My name is Peter. I am 35 years old, and I identify as a gay man. I originally came from Malaysia, obviously lived there for most of my life, and then I came to Australia to study for my degree, fell in love with the country, but couldn't stay, so I had to go back to work. So worked in the lab for 3 years. My major was in biotechnology, so I worked in the laboratory for a couple of years, 3 years, doing lab stuff, which I really hated. And then decided with the help of my sister to apply for a residency here in Australia. So back then there was a long wait, so I had to apply for it, had to wait 4 years to get it. In the meantime, went to Singapore for 2 years to work in retail, which was an experience, but I didn't like it anyway because it was sales, didn't like doing sales. And then whilst I was there, I got my visa, and then obviously migrated over to Australia. So because my visa is a state-sponsored visa, so I could only work in regional parts of Australia, and Adelaide is still considered regional then, I'm not sure about now. So packed my bag then, off I came here for an interview, got the job, and been here for 7 years plus now. So it's been a journey. So my background is Catholic, so my parents are obviously strong believers. So always grew up in a Catholic church. Growing up gay has been quite an experience. I suppose a lot of people might be quite familiar with the story anyway, growing up in a Catholic church, trying to hide my sexuality, trying to deny, you know, my own validity, trying to, you know, pray daily, asking God to get rid of it. Never happened. And obviously my parents were Chinese as well, so there's always a big importance on passing down the family name. So it's all, and I'm the only son, so it's quite a pressure being put on me to have to, you know, be straight, get married, have kids, and, you know, pass on the traditions and the family name. So at the moment it's all right now. Obviously I moved, my parents are still back home, and they have slowly learned to accept it, although they don't accept it fully. But I think somehow, to a certain degree, they have sort of maybe accepted that reality, but still trying to change me, even today. It's always a struggle and a battle when I go back home, especially for occasions, and there will always be that one talk before I go home, or before I come back to Australia, about, are you sure you're gay? You know, you shouldn't pray or whatever, and stuff like that. So I suppose a lot of people have the same story as well as me, growing up in a Catholic background. Yeah, struggle. I sort of knew I was gay quite early, when I was maybe about 10, 11, I think. I was in school, I remember, and I had a neighbor that goes to school with me, and I sort of had a very strong attraction towards this friend of mine, this guy friend of mine, when we were young. And that attraction has sort of, you know, progressed over the years from primary school to secondary school, up into college, you know, always falling head over heels over straight guys and stuff. So I knew I was gay, right, like quite early on, but then always trying to think that, or to believe that it was just a phase and that it would go away. And obviously it never went away. And it was also quite a struggle living at home when I was young as well, because my parents sort of knew or had the inclination that I was gay. But, you know, really they're trying to sort of intervene, and I'm trying to shut that out and pretend it didn't happen and try not to address it, because obviously I was young then, like how am I supposed to know? So it was not until when I was in college or in university, when I came here to study in Australia, that I sort of got away from my parents, had my own mind and, you know, my own way of thinking, have this time and space to think about things myself, and realized that it was time to come out to myself and to come out to my friends. And coming out to my close friends back then that came with me to Australia from Malaysia was a big part of my coming out process, and that really helped a lot because their first reactions were very positive. So that helped me in my subsequent coming out after my studies and coming back to Malaysia. So I think I came out to all my friends before I eventually came out to my parents. My parents sort of encouraged me to go to a church camp that's for young working adults. And in that church camp, they were talking about being honest with your family members and telling the truth and everything. And there was this segment where we're meant to write letters to anyone that we want to. But in particular, I was thinking of writing it to my parents, and I was struggling to put words on that paper because I wasn't sure if it was the right time to be telling them this or not. So I approached the priest that was sort of overlooking the church camp, and I told him my dilemma, and I said, I want to tell this, but I don't know whether it's the right thing to do. And he encouraged me to write it regardless and tell that story and to come out to my parents. And he said that there's nothing wrong being gay. And this is coming from priests. And he told me that there's lots of priests in the church that are gay as well. So there's nothing wrong with it. So it's got to be hard, but you got to tell and be truthful. So based on his advice, I told my parents. In the letter that was meant to be mailed out to the home, but I couldn't wait because that the anxiety of knowing that the letter's coming, because I was staying at home at the time, was quite unbearable. So I went back that night itself after the church came and told them. And as you all know, it's tears and sorrow and lots of emotional blackmail and lots of, you know, disappointment. It wasn't very good coming out at the time, that night coming out. And it was quite hurtful. My parents said a lot of hurtful things as well. But obviously now, after so many years, you know, I suppose I look at it as those words were coming from a place of love somehow. And it's their way of showing that they care. So I suppose I've gone past it now. I've moved on. But I remember those times were quite difficult. And subsequent months after that, it was very difficult as well, because my parents went from like 100% really caring about me to overnight 0% caring about me, and I was just left my own to do my own thing, to fend for myself, to get my own food. They didn't kick me out, so that was good. But the treatment that I've got from everything else is as if I was being kicked out anyway. So, but I'm still grateful I had a roof over my head. I could still come home. Yes, they weren't talking to me much then, but I suppose I'm more fortunate than most of other people who have worse experiences than myself. When I came out to my parents, it was a year after I came back from Australia from my studies. So that time, I've sort of already applied for my visa to go back to Australia. So when I told my parents and that happened, I knew that I couldn't stay long and I had to move out. So I then applied to work in Singapore. So I think pretty much right after that, probably 6 months later, I found a job in Singapore and I moved out. So I didn't stay quite long at home after coming out. I think it was a good thing as well, because it gave my parents some time to be alone and sort of process it as much as they could. And it gave me the time to think about myself and sort of figure things out on my own without having any external influence and having to feel guilty about it. So being away in Australia for 2 years, the job sucked, but it was necessary. And I think that really helped a lot of my mental health in terms of, you know, sort of coming to terms with what I've done, getting clarity on what I should do next, getting some spiritual guidance in a way, not in a Catholic way, but more like a a new age kind of way. I'm not really fully into it, but I did get some guidance in that sense. And then 2 years later, I came to Australia. So Malaysia is a Muslim country. Obviously, Islam is the main religion. So homosexuality is illegal. So you can go to jail, you can get caned and stuff like that. So it's not accepted back home. I've been fortunate in the sense that because I wasn't out for very long in Malaysia, I haven't really faced any persecution or discrimination as such. Because these are things you just don't tell people, you don't tell your work colleagues, you just, you know, work as per normal, like as if you're a straight person. So, you know, being gay hasn't affected my career, hasn't affected my my social life and such, because I wasn't out back then. But there's always that fear that, you know, you mustn't be telling, you mustn't be really out. So there's no such thing as Pride Marches back home. There are organizations and charities for LGBT communities back at home, but they are not as big as they were. They are here in Australia, and mostly they are more for like towards like AIDS. Like they're still having that stigma of associating gay people with AIDS and stuff. So there's a lot of organizations and charities that sort of work in that space, which is crucial. But none more for like you know, housing people who have been kicked out and stuff like that. So it's not a lot of charities for that or organizations. So back home it's illegal. So you know, I obviously, you know, don't go around, you know, prancing with a rainbow and stuff, and not shout out, be out loud and proud back home. So it's a bit hard back home, and it's the same in Singapore. Singapore is more accepted. They don't have gay parades, but they do have events similar to that. I think, forgive me if I'm wrong, I think it's still illegal in Singapore as well, but it's more accepted. So you do get gay bars and stuff like that in Singapore compared to Malaysia. Malaysia, I believe they do have gay bars, but it's obviously all underground, you know, nothing's public and stuff. So being gay back in Malaysia is quite hard, I think. So people just stay silent and just stay in the closet forever. And obviously some people just end up married, getting married, have kids, and just never leaving their authentic self. Or you get people like me that decide too that this is not the lifestyle that I want, so people migrate out of the country. Or they commit, yes, unfortunately, or they commit suicide, that's correct. Yeah, it's terrible. It's quite hard. Most of the time is obviously living a life of lie and deception. So I'm telling my parents one story that, oh no, I'm not gay. And then on the other hand, I'm sort of out with my friends and they know that I'm gay. So friends for me have been very crucial in my coping mechanism. Without my friends being who they are and being supportive, I don't think I could have gone through that on my own. So my friends have been extremely supportive. I could always be myself with them. So they are my coping mechanism. So when I'm at home with my parents, it's obviously a different story. A different face, different facade, and then when I'm with my friends, again, it's a different facade. So I suppose I've learned to try not to stay home too much and try to go out as much as I can so that I don't get bombarded with the questions. But being in a staunch Catholic background as well, I then still have to go to church. And I mean, I don't have to, but you know, moms do nag. So I do end up still going to, you know, weekly services and stuff on Sundays, and sort of not really believing in what I'm doing in terms of, you know, the prayers and what they're preaching and stuff. Going to church still gives me a sense of serenity. Like when I go to church now, I still feel calm. I think it's because of my background, and it gives me a sense of calmness and soothingness. But obviously, I don't agree with the teachings and stuff, and I don't really fully dwell in the Bible and stuff, because I just don't believe in the Bible being written by man and stuff. So yeah, so it's interesting, but yeah, definitely friends have been very crucial in my coping. I have a few gay friends back in Malaysia. Not a lot, because back then when I was young, I was a bit of an introvert, so, and a bit of a shy guy. So I suppose it's a lack of self-esteem, you know, basically lying to your parents all the time and trying to sort of ignore your true self. So I had a very low self-esteem back then when I was young. So I don't really go out. I have a few gay friends that I know from school. They helped me come out as well, as much as I suppose I helped them come out as well. But other than that, you know, I don't really have much gay friends back home in Malaysia. Even now, thinking about it, I don't think I've, aside from the ones that I know, I don't think I have any new gay friends back home. Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Coming to Australia was liberating. That's the word to use, liberating. When I was here studying for that 2 years for my degree, I've done stuff I've never done before back home. Yeah. So, you know, I've met with gay guys, we would go out and stuff, and been in relationship with a few guys, not at one time, but over a period of time. And that sort of gave me an idea of who I want to be my partner, like the type of guy that I would like as my future partner, and the traits that I don't want in my future partner. So it was a lot of sexual exploration, things I've not done before back home. So that was quite liberating, and that really opened my eyes to a lot of things, and really affirmed my obviously my sexuality, that's what I want, and that's who I am, and I'm happy, you know, accepting who I am. Coming here as well has made me realize that there's a few people that are not really out there to help you. They may be in the community, but like the LGBT community, but they are there for themselves. So that's really opened my eyes as well to be cautious of the people I trust, and not just fully expose myself vulnerably to someone without taking precautions. Having said that, you know, I think I've done well. I came back again. Sort of manifested the partner that I want, and somehow the universe has given me one, and I've been with my partner for 7 years now, as long as I've been here actually, and obviously we are engaged now, gonna get married in 3 years time, so things are going well for me. But obviously thanks to all the past experience that I had, you know, dating different men out there and you know, deciding my own standards and the criteria I want in a partner. Coming back to Australia, I've never thought that I would sort of want to venture in the advocacy area. I thought I would just be a gay man, find a partner, settle down and work as per normal and that's it, you know, grow old together. But as I am now doing my Rainbow Rule stuff, it sort of opened my eyes to a whole lot more areas in terms of advocacy and the different charities and organizations that are there helping the community. And me going through one of the training courses done by Equality Australia has really helped me find my passion in that area. So me coming from Malaysia, not having exposed to any of those work, and now coming into Australia and finding that passion to do it, it's quite surprising. I would never think that I would be wanting to do that, because it's something that, you know, back home in Malaysia, you just don't really voice things out because the country is quite, obviously, like the government's quite strong in terms of that you know, you don't do much protest and stuff. So having to change my mindset over to, you know, trying to voice out for myself and for the community as well has been tremendously encouraging, in terms of that. And I think I'm quite, it's a learning curve. I've never done it before, so I think as I'm doing it and I'm learning more, I think eventually that's my end goal. That's what I want to do with my life. So Rainbow Rules started 2 years plus ago. When I came to Australia, because I always have more of a creative mind, I like drawing, doodling and stuff like that. So when I came over, I decided to take a TAFE course in graphic design. So I did a diploma for 3 years, and I then decided to go into an online t-shirt, you know, design thing, just on my own, you know, just want to be my own boss and see how that works out. So I then started with that, with my own label, doing it, and my sister, who's also in Australia now, with my brother-in-law, one day decided to approach me and, you know, give me this idea. So instead of creating t-shirt designs for just anything, why don't you focus on, you know, LGBT themed t-shirts? And I thought that's a good idea, because I already had a few in my previous t-shirt business thing. So I just thought I'll just focus it and create a new brand, and just focus on LGBT themed t-shirts. So that would be cool. So it's just a way for me to just have my creative outlet, you know, do something and see if it earns a buck or two, you know. So from there, we started, then Rainbow Rule came about. We've obviously trademarked the name, you know, got the trademark for the t-shirts and stuff. We want something Australian, so obviously kangaroos are Australian, and we want something gay, which is rainbow, so Rainbow Rule. So that's how that came about. So from there, we've obviously done all the online stuff, got a shop set out, all the designs out, and then from there, it started to grow from just an online business to now what it is, which is like so / advocacy work as well. Because I then started to go into all the different charities and different organizations, meet up with people, you know, find out what they do, how we can help in a way. I mean, the intention was to supply t-shirts and stuff, and then it's sort of then gone into more and more and more now. So our logo is Out Loud and Proud. So we sort of focus on coming out stories. So I'm very big on coming out stories. So we want to, I mean, we have created a video for the past 2 years on National Coming Out Day. We just compile videos of people sharing their coming out story and then ending with a positive message for people who are still in the closet or thinking about coming out. You know, so that's something that we really like to focus on. That separates us out from the rest. So we want to focus on coming out. We have projects in the pipeline. Obviously, I'm working with my sister, my brother-in-law as well. Projects in the pipeline to that relates to coming out. So, example, creating a coming out kit that people that they can get their hands on, that will have all the information, all the resources they need. If that's their journey of wanting to come out. So that's the pipelines. Don't know how it's gonna look like or how's it gonna end up, but you know, that's our ongoing project at the moment. So I'm quite proud of what we've achieved for the past 2 years. Obviously I'm working full-time to support that. But like I said, eventually we love to be able to do this fully, you know, attend all the Pride festivals in the whole of Australia, have our little booths everywhere, you know, sell our t-shirts, sell our ideas, our coming out inspirations and stuff to help the community out there, people who want to come out. So that's our That's our goal. How I met my partner. Very traditional, not very traditional, very typical. It's not Grindr, but I can't remember what is the name of that thing. It was online, it's not an app. I can't remember.
Gaydar,
yes, through Gaydar. I think it's Gaydar or some sort. There was two of us at the time. So I was in Australia, got a job, settling down in my new rented room at Anzac Highway down the road. So I was obviously trying to test out the dating scene and stuff like that. So I put my intentions out there to the universe, you know, want someone perfect for me. And obviously then chatted through with a few guys. And so met my partner Daniel on the on Gaydar. So we've sort of, and he works in the city as well, very close to where I was working back then in the city. So we sort of, set up a lunch date. So we went to a sushi place in the city, have lunch, talked a lot, found out that there's a lot of similarities between us, between who we are, what our intentions is and stuff like that. It was a very mature type of a conversation, like we knew what we wanted. So we had lunch. I remember it was on a Tuesday, we had lunch, then had lunch on a Wednesday, had lunch on a Thursday, had lunch on a Friday. Also had dinner date on a Friday, and then, you know, went back to his place and the rest was history. So we've then sort of started dating then. He was living quite far away as well when I was living originally. So every weekend we would sort of, he would come and pick me up, we would go out, go on dates and stuff. So eventually I moved in to his place. Obviously before that met the parents. It was, I think, on an Easter weekend. Parents are lovely, very lovely. And met the whole family, met the nan, met his extended family. They were all very nice, all accepting. And then 2 years ago we went to Europe, went to Paris. And back then at the time, it was just before the whole postal vote thing. So postal vote was a yes, and then I think a month later we were in Europe. So I took it as a sign that now that Australia has said yes, that I should propose. I always wanted to be proposed to, but I didn't think that he would have planned it that far. So I thought, we're gonna be in Paris, City of Love. If you want something done, you gotta do it yourself. So I did it. So I've organized a photo shoot, and I told Daniel that we have been talking about marriage anyway. So I said, let's take photos in Paris, because it's not like we're going to be there every year, right? So let's just take it, then we can use it for our wedding eventually, whenever that happens. So it was a surprise proposal shoot. So met up with the photographer, he showed us a few poses and stuff. So we did the few poses, but we've talked before about the signal. So when we both had our backs turned back to each other, and that was the signal. So while his back was facing me, I turned around and went down on my knee in front of the Eiffel Tower. And then he was asked to turn around and he was very surprised. He was very surprised. His reaction was like, is this a prop? Is this for real? He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it was real. He thought it was all puppy. I said, no, it's not. It's real. So obviously he said yes 2 years ago, and then we're gonna get married in 3 years time, or 2 years in a bit time, in 2020, on September 17. It's a significant date because that will be 10 years of us being together. So we've got engaged on our five years together, and then another 5 years, and then we'll get married. My parents know that obviously I have a partner, that we're engaged, because I told my parents the first thing when it happened, because I didn't want them to find out from someone else. They don't agree to it, but I think it would just be best coming from me so that they're not then surprised. So I did tell my parents. My parents are aware that I'm getting married in 2022, and my parents have expressed that they do not wish to join in the wedding or to attend, and they do not want to see Daniel as well. It is a bit sad, but Daniel, he understands the situation, and I told him, you know, things can happen in 3 years' time, we'll never know. And we've given them ample of like 5 years' notice that we're going to get married. So hopefully, fingers crossed, when the time comes, they might change their mind. But regardless, I've sort of accepted the fact that if they don't attend, that's fine as well. It's not going to ruin my whole day. That it will be okay as well. So I've learned to live with it. These are things you can't force people to accept. So as much as they can't force me, I can't force them neither. So we just have to accept it in any way we can and just move on with it, I suppose. But yeah, Daniel, for the time being, not possible to be speaking or seeing my parents at the moment. But his parents are alright. So they are fantastic, very accepting. So I'm quite happy. I've been very fortunate, no idea why, but I have not even at work. Like, I work for a bank, Suncorp, for my full-time job, and the organization is very accepting in diversity and inclusion. So it's a very big policy of Suncorp to do that. And I'm actually a member of an employee resource group called Amplify that actually actively promotes inclusion and diversity within the company. So we hold events like morning teas, like for either Hobbit Day, you know, Wear It Purple, our Adelaide Pride March, you know, and stuff like that. So I'm in the members, we call ourselves champions, where we actually are actively promoted. So at work, I've been out from day one. There was no need for me to hide. So, and everyone is just like, it's just nothing. It's just part of normal day life. As long as I do my work, I suppose, whatever, who I love, doesn't matter. And so yeah, I've not faced any discrimination or any bullying as far as I've been in Australia. So I don't have any stories to tell about that. My story has been very positive so far. There's a lot of... I've made a lot of new friends in Adelaide when I started joining the groups and stuff. There's actually a lot of support here, a lot of organizations, a lot of advocates here that are doing a lot of fantastic work out there. And Adelaide being such a proud state, you know, we tend to be quite proud about the work that we do in our own state. Even through, not just through advocacy, but with Suncorp as well, because I'm in that group now, we actually do also connect with other big organizations in Adelaide, like Westpac, the different universities and all. And we sort of come together and sort of talk about the things that we can do in our own companies and our own state and SA on how to obviously promote diversity and inclusion. So meeting with all these people have given me a lot of inspiration and motivation to continue to do what I do, because some of them are my friends now, and they would hear me say, like, you know, being self-doubt again, like, oh, I don't know if what I'm doing is actually making a difference. And they would turn around and say, you know, what you're doing is making a difference, so continue doing what you're doing. And that support is very, very important and very crucial to me at the moment. So I obviously do as much as I can to attend all the meetings, you know, all the gatherings and stuff, and just trying to, you know, keep my positivity up, and obviously try to plan ahead what Rainbow Rule wants to achieve in the future. Because I suppose we all have such grand plans for you know, my own business or whatever businesses. but we don't know if we're ever gonna achieve it. But I suppose if we, you know, aim for the stars, if we land on the moon, that's still something positive, I suppose. Because my sister actually came to me one day about talking about what we can do in the future if we do get funding and stuff like that, or somehow one day, you know, million people buy our t-shirts and we have this money now. We actually would like to somehow set up a cafe of some sort, like a Rainbow Road Cafe, where we can help the LGBT community. Like, because we're so big on coming out, right? I was thinking, not a lot of coming out stories are positive. Some people do get kicked out of their home. So if we have a business that we can hire these people who got kicked out of home, they got no job, or they got kicked out of the job because of sexuality and have nowhere to stay, you know, we can hire them to run the cafe or be a worker in the cafe, and that way they are away from, they have a place to stay, or they have money to be able to have a place to stay, don't have to worry about their jobs and stuff. So that's like a goal. But then again, we don't know when's that gonna happen. But that's just something in the pipelines that, yeah, that's a possibility, we could do that as well. So yeah, a lot of little projects along the pipelines, but we don't know when that's gonna happen. So
what are your thoughts on the religious discrimination bill?
That bill. Definitely should be just scrapped. There's a lot of talk about it. I've attended one of the meetings organized by South Australia Rainbow Alliance committee here about the religious bill and stuff. I don't fully understand it, but I know there's amendments being talked about to be added onto it now that is actually much worse than the first one. So I definitely do not agree with that bill. I think it just needs to go away. But I know there's some parts of the bill that are okay, just not all of it. I don't know fully the whole bill at the moment. So I just hope that whatever organizations within the LGBT community that is fighting for us do get, obviously, our support. And obviously, we need to be sending letters or calling our local MPs to voice our opinion as to why we disagree with that bill. I know there's a lot of work being done out there now that we can use to help us write our letter, or to like the context that we can send to our local MPs. So I would encourage people who are wanting to do so, obviously seek help from those organizations that has already done the work, that we can then just use it so that we're sending the correct message and not, you know, the wrong one. Yeah. If you are in the process of coming out or thinking of coming out, obviously make sure that when you do so that it's safe. If it's not safe, then obviously think it through. Make sure you have come out to yourself first, that you have accepted yourself for who you are, and always seek support from anyone you think that would be very supportive of you coming out. Friends are the best. Some family members, if you know them, can be very good candidates as well. But definitely come out at your own time, at your own will, and as and when you want to. Don't feel pressured to come out. If it's not safe to do so, definitely do not do it. Do a lot of research, I would say. As part of me doing Rainbow Road, I've done a lot of research as well, from different countries. And UK is actually quite good when it comes out to resources for coming out. They actually have quite a number of organizations that have guidebooks actually to help you sort of figure out where you fall in terms of the gender identity spectrum, you know, your sexuality and stuff like that. So do lots of research, be comfortable with who you are, accept who you are, find out who your support network is, and when it's safe to do so, up with rainbows and glitters, and I can promise you, you know, you'll be the best thing you've ever done. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you are struggling with your own mental health, please contact Lifeline on 13 1114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to tell your story, share your experiences, or would just like to get in touch, you can email me at queerlifestories@outlook.com. You can also find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search for Queer Life Stories. This podcast is a no-budget, one-man operation to produce, but you can support this podcast by subscribing to us at Patreon. That's patreon.com/queerlifestories. If you're listening in Tasmania and would like support regarding your sexuality, gender, or intersex status, contact Working It Out on 62311200 or find them on Facebook. QLife provide anonymous and free LGBTI peer support and referral for people across Australia wanting to talk about sexuality, gender identity, relationships, and more. They're available 3 p.m. to midnight every day on 1800 184 527, or you can web chat with them at qlife.org.au. You can hear future episodes of Queer Life Stories on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, subscribe, rate, review, and share. We will be back soon. Thank you for listening. Take care of yourself and each other.